around New York City have shut down because they're volunteer people that were not able to cope with the you know, the health safety protocols. Typically, we might serve around 400 meals in a day, but what we've seen is double the amount, up to 850 servings of meals in one day. We've seen lines around the block, down the corner. It's amazing. I've never seen anything like it in all my years. To make sure that, first of all, our volunteers and our staff had safety equipment, masks, gloves, disinfecting surfaces. We space people out in line by 6 feet between each person when they're waiting.
Typing the message is very low volume. Into the email. Right now. To the email, yeah.
Places they can get showers. There's not that many. Places they can get medical care. Many are elderly and many have compromised immune systems. And so we're trying to connect them to those vital resources to keep them alive. When the pandemic hit, most of our volunteers actually canceled on us, which is understandable, you know, taking health precautions. But what I was really touched by was the many volunteers who stepped up. Not as many as we usually have, but even today, I had an elderly woman who is very, I've known her for many years. She's been a volunteer for many years with us, and she's very poor herself and just a step away from homelessness, but she shows up every week. There she was, handing out socks to people and giving them, you know, a kind word, an encouraging word. And so I love it when I see New Yorkers show up. And put themselves in harm's way, potentially put their health at risk to help someone who is definitely worse off and in needs a friend in time of trouble.
Juan Galloway is president and CEO of New York City Relief. Stay tuned for more installments of New York in Crisis, WBAI's Coronavirus Diary, and for the latest news and updates on COVID-19.
It's a cold and sunny day here in New York City, around 44 degrees. On this show, I've been saying it's the longest, darkest winter in memory. But today, it's bright and beautiful, but still cold. That's the all-time classic, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. My name is Sri Srinivasan with a new program on WBAI. We call it Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. We'll discuss various aspects of the crisis, but we'll focus on its effects on society's most vulnerable, workers, the poor, the marginalized, and talk to ordinary citizens and experts. Let's learn together. I'm the Marshall Loeb Visiting Professor of Digital Innovation at Stony Brook University and someone who spent 25 years working at iconic New York City institutions. I was the Chief Digital Officer of Columbia, then the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and then the city itself, working in the basement of City Hall. All three of those New York City icons, like millions of New Yorkers, have been disrupted as never before. A beloved city has become the U.S. epicenter of the crisis and the face of what can happen to the rest of the country, especially with the meltdown at many of our hospitals. We're calling the show Helpful and Hopeful so that we can emerge stronger, and emerge we will. But we aren't just going to pretend everything's fine like someone we know in D.C. We're going to be clear-eyed and share factual, useful information and stories throughout the show. We're on for 2 hours every Saturday, noon to 2 Eastern, on 99.5 FM WBAI and around the world on WBAI.org. Call in and share your thoughts. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, or email me, sree@sree.net. That's sree@sree.net. We've had so many great emails and tweets. You can tweet us at Sree, S-R-E-E, and we're using the hashtag WBAI3, WBAISREE. Who's been helpful to you? How have you been helpful to others? Share a story, share a tip, call in now. I have some special guests on the show today, and they'll pop in throughout the 2 hours we're together. But this will also be recorded so you can listen to them afterwards. We're going to be focusing on medical issues. So we'll have with us Dr. Lisa Ganju, we'll have Ann Sansarero, and Dr. Amit Chakrabarty. Ann is an RN, a registered nurse. So let's start this hour with Dr. Lisa Ganju, who's a specialist in gastroenterology and hepatology at NYU Langone, and Ann Sansevero, who's also the founder and CEO of HealthSense LLC, an aging life care management consulting practice. Dr. Lisa, hello.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. I just know that you've had a very busy week, very busy month. It seemed like a very busy year. Tell us where you're calling from. Tell us how you are before we get some questions in from our callers.
Sure. So I am based in New York City. As you mentioned earlier, I am at NYU. Everything's just been turned over upside down, sideways, ever since all of this stuff happened. And we're just trying to figure it out. And it's just been an active process of righting ourselves. But I can't wait till this is over for sure.
And have you been taking care of yourself? Because I noticed as we were exchanging messages that you seem to have been up very late.
Yeah. It's hard. Like we do have 12-hour shifts. I am now on an off cycle, so I'll be back doing telemedicine to manage some of my GI patients. But yeah, I was working in the hospital for the past 2 weeks with 12-hour shifts. We did have some days off in between. So, you know, those 12 hours, you're 100% in the hospital. So once I got home, I was able to kind of manage with my own day-to-day things that needed to get done before the next day. But I think I'm doing a pretty good job of trying to take care of myself during the off time, and on time as well. Just pacing yourself and, you know, kind of remembering that, you got to take care of yourself before you take care of others. Otherwise, you're of no use to anyone. So I think it's important to do a lot of self-care for sure.
Thank you. And we're cheering you on as we're cheering on every doctor, every nurse, every health aide, every administrator. You're all frontline workers. Thank you for what you do. We're so grateful. We also have with us Ann Sansevero. Ann, thank you for being here.
She's not there.
Oh, she's going to join us. But let's continue with Dr. Lisa Ganju. Our telephone number is 212-209-2877. If you have a call or a question for our doctor, please call in, and our producer, Sean, will tell us when we have a caller so we can bring them right in. So tell us, Lisa, what have you been seeing? What have you been feeling as we have been going through these days?
Well, I have to say, I mean, this whole COVID-19 and the infection and how it's affecting, you know, our patients, it's just incredible that we're learning so much as things are going on. And there's not a lot that we know about the virus and how it reacts to medications and how it reacts in our body. And it seems like every other day we're learning something new and having to basically change our protocols and add things, take things away. And it's quite challenging at every level. And I know everyone's working really hard to figure out how we can manage this virus, but you know, the virus is quite wily and it seems to be outwitting a lot of people. So, you know, it's caused a lot of havoc throughout the world. And, you know, we have scientists and physicians and that are really working hard to manage this, but it's quite unpredictable, the course of how some people do quite well versus how some people don't do so well. People who have pretty easy courses, some have pretty complicated courses. And there's no single factor that says this works this way in this patient and this works this way in this patient. We do see that there is some correlation between people who have pre-existing medical conditions, and we found that those people tend not to do as well. And we don't know if it has something to do with their immunity or what's going on with that, but we do see that patients that have underlying diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, for some reason, male population seems to have it more than female population. And, you know, even the statistics keep seeming to change. So, again, it's hard to kind of figure out where and which path it's going to take.
Let's share some of the numbers from Governor Cuomo. He just shared them today. 783 New Yorkers died yesterday due to the coronavirus. 4,468 New Yorkers have died in the past week alone. And at least 8,600 New Yorkers have died due to the virus. And a message from Yashar Ali, who is a terrific voice on Twitter. He says, all the more reason to stay at home. What we're doing is working. This is not an invitation to relax. And it's kind of hard to say this is all working, Doc, when we're hearing these numbers. It is so sad. Every one of these people who died is a human being, a fellow New Yorker, someone who was loved and had family and friends. Talk about that, please.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think people forget that behind every statistic is a person. It's a mom, it's a dad, it's a grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle. You know, those 700 people are 700 too many lives that were lost. And, yeah, it is devastating. You know, I think there was some word that there might be some leveling off of or we might have met an apex and we might not be having as many patients or people getting admitted. It's just that we're having a harder time getting them off the ventilators and their hospital stay is quite long. So if you can beat it and get out of there, that's great. But if you can't, that's where we're having the people that are unfortunately either dying or having prolonged intubations. And you know, the longer you're intubated and need to be on that assisted breathing machine, the harder it is to come off of it. I mean, there are people that can, but it's a long, long haul.
Thank you. Tell us about what's happening in the hospitals, because there's been these right-wing conspiracy theories that the media is just making up the stories. How come we don't see pictures from inside the ER? And that's because you are not allowed to share things outside the air. Look how quiet the hospital is on the outside. This is a chance for you to bring us some, you know, take us inside the hospital. What is happening? And how do you find the strength to go in and do all this? How do you and your colleagues do it when it's so dangerous?
Well, you know, I don't want to say it's a calling, but, you know, it's why we did this. It's what we signed up for. We're here to take care of people. You know, obviously, we want to have our own protection to be able to take care of the population. So, you know, having adequate personal protective equipment is paramount to helping us do our job. Because, you know, it is such a contagious and devastating virus. A lot of people don't even know they may be carriers for it. And so making sure we have protection allows us to do our job. Is what's going on depends on what's going on in the hospital. It depends on what department you're in, depends on which part of the city you're in, depends on the acuity of the patient. So, you know, every hospital is going through their own trials and tribulations, and you know, it's tough work, but it's all about lives and saving lives and trying to do our best to maintain things.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Doc. I just want to remind everybody, you're watching, you're listening to Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. And we want you to call us at 212-209-2877. We'd love to have you talk to us, talk to the doctor, ask her questions. We're going to have doctors on for the entire 2 hours here. Dr. Lisa will be here with us now. We'll be joined by another doctor later. An RN is also going to be joining us, and Sansevero. So let's see if we have a caller on the line yet. And if we don't, we will continue to talk to Dr. Lisa Ganju. Our phone number is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. So we have some...
Go ahead.
Yep, go ahead, please.
Good morning to all, and thank you for Sean and all behind the scenes that get everyone on the air, no matter where they are today. This is Pastor Michael Vincent Crea, C-R-E-A. My pro bono ministry for 30 years has been One O-N-E, One World Life Systems. And it's I work with everyone from A to Z, agnostic to Zoroaster, and just trying to facilitate basic necessities of life. That being said, my service dog and I were down in New York since October. My own physician, an NYU professor and head of vascular surgery at Bellevue, the city's number one public hospital, had written to Mayor de Blasio, his wife, Stephen Banks, who used to defend people who were without housing, as we were. And due to the fact that I am a daily reviver of esophageal cancer, with 90% of my esophagus off or taken out and a third of my stomach removed, it was incomprehensible that even with my doctor writing to the administration that our humanity and our rights was not respected for reasonable accommodation, not being able to go to a shelter and ought to have been in a hotel room, was not complied with the mayor. That's why I'm calling now from Ithaca, New York. And that was the reason I'm bringing out this background, is that another front line, which I hear, I don't hear enough from, is other pastors. We had a wonderful pastor now on with Bob Law, Reverend Lacey, with whom I think I've attended some of the events that she had actually mobilized people. And we cannot lose sight of the humanity of each of the people, whether they're the homeless that were like us sleeping at Columbus Circle Station. And I have a hand sanitizer given to us by a woman from Singapore who saw me and Taranga. My dog's name is a Wolof name. I did hand washing as a Peace Corps volunteer with midwives. And we got that from a woman who saw us and before going back to Singapore gave us a whole relief package. Now, the thing that I want to bring up is that I'm not going to criticize the governor or the mayor like Jonah did to the Ninevites. Okay, they're repenting in the way that they can. That's good. But we have to keep things in perspective. And so I look at 4 days, 4 years, 40 years, and 400 years. I say 400 years is because the indigenous people whose land, stolen land we sit on, are even worse off, including up in Massachusetts, where the administration has taken away the land of the indigenous people where Plymouth is.
Pastor, this is Sri, our host. Thank you so much for being with us. Do you have a question or a comment for Dr. Lisa Ganju. We have her for a very short time. We want to make sure we get as much medical information out to our viewers and listeners as possible. So if you have a question, please let us know. Dr. Lisa, as you listen here, what is your sense of the fact that we have all these different folks who are passing away? Do you feel like we will be able to honor each of them as we're doing this?
That's a tough one. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, that there will be some honoring them. I had heard something about doing the flags, but I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, to fly the flags at half mast to honor the poor victims that were lost with this battle against COVID. I don't know how else to honor them other than to respect the fact that, you know, that they're gone, unfortunately. And they're, as I said, they're other people's family members and they're not just statistics.
Absolutely. How does your specialty affect your experience with the crisis?
Well, you know, as you had mentioned in the introduction, I am I'm a gastroenterologist by training, and we do know in some of the literature that there's actually the gastrointestinal manifestations of COVID infection actually come way before or soon or before any of the respiratory or the breathing problems that these patients have. There's some literature to support that these patients have loss of appetite, loss of sense of smell and taste, some nausea and vomiting. Diarrhea is a big component of the infection. And, you know, they looked retrospectively at the patients in China that had it, and they found out that they did actually have some gastrointestinal complaints before they had the classic respiratory or breathing difficulties and the pneumonia type picture that they had. And anecdotally, just talking to some of the folks that have the infection but were never in the hospital, were actually managed at home. Remember, 80% of the people who get infected with this can be managed at home and don't have to go to the hospital. A majority of them, their first symptoms were they just lost their sense of smell and had a bit of an upset stomach and didn't really have the respiratory complaints as much as the ones that are keeping them in the hospital.
So can we talk a little bit about that sense of smell? A lot of us are now making sure we're smelling things all the time. And one of the good things is if you wash your hands with soap, you can smell that so you know you're okay. We have a very stinky dog. And so I've never been so happy to smell smell her aroma. But the question is, do we think it's 80% correlation, 90%? Like, how can we make sure that that's part of one of the things that we're aware of?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I think, you know, there is some running jokes of people saying that, you know, as long as they can smell, they'll just go into the office or go into work, because that means they're not infected. And that's, again, that's a complete joke and always kind of something that we'll giggle about. But, you know, honestly, as far as the correlation goes, I'm not sure exactly what percentage of patients will have that. But it is one of those anecdotal type things that we are seeing. But yeah, as far as the gut issues as well, there's a lot of gut issues that come along with it. And usually their sense of taste and smell comes back with the resolution of the virus.
Thank you. We have a caller on the air, WBAI, you're on the air. Tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Yes, hi, my name is Bill and I'm calling from Long Island. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Sri. Listen, just a question, a comment and a question. I was listening to a doctor recently who took it upon himself to do some research into this and came across a group, I think it was a risk analytics group that does work in Africa. And they released this paper talking about the fact that if we could get 80% of the population wearing masks, as soon as possible, this should have been done immediately, that this thing would have been over in a week to 10 days. Now, this was their assessment, and these people, you know, actually have dealt with pandemics in Africa. And I'm surprised that, you know, we didn't hear things like this at the beginning. That's my number one. Number two, maybe the good doctor could talk about the fact that we're not looking. I mean, there seems to be disparity between people who are getting it, people who are dying and not dying. And why aren't we looking at the microbiome to compare these two things, since the immune system resides, at least 70% of it, in the microbiome?
Thank you for the call from Long Island. We appreciate it, Bob. Dr. Lisa Ganju, you're our medical expert. So two questions. One, well, let's start with the microbiome, and then let's talk about masks.
So, you know, actually, just to go back, I was able to look up something. It's about 50% of patients that had COVID had digestive symptoms that was attached to it. You had asked about what percentage, and I was able to find out that it was about 50% or so. So going back to your question, as far as going into the microbiome, you know, I think at this point right now, there's just so much research that's going into how do we can manage the symptoms. There's not a lot of time to evaluate the microbiome per se, but right now it's just a matter of trying to attack the virus and definitely what the gentleman on the phone was saying about immunity and the microbiome, there is an association between that. But when it comes to COVID at this point right now, what we're worried about is just trying to control the virus. And I'm sure there's people who have microbiome labs that are probably looking into it. I mean, there's people furiously looking and seeing what we can do to manage the immunity relationship to this. But I mean, it's a little bit more than immunity. It's a lot of different pathophysiology that's happening within, like, the inflammatory markers of the patients, how they're responding to the virus. It's more complicated than anything else that we've ever looked into.
Thank you. Dr. Lisa Ganju is talking to us on Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. Please continue to call in. We have a chance for you to talk to our doctor. We have other experts who are joining us. We're on till 2 p.m. Eastern on WBAI 99.5 FM and also on WBAI.org. So if you have family or friends outside New York City, please ask them to join us on WBAI.org. Doctor, please talk a little bit about masks, because clearly that there's been so much confusion. The guidance went from no need to wear masks if you're not symptomatic to you should wear masks if you're going out, and the president at the same time saying he's not going to wear a mask. So it's been confusing. In other parts of the world where they're used to wearing masks, it seems like they've had some success flattening the curve or making it less complicated, because we've got to understand right now America has just been announced as having crossed Italy as the most number of deaths in the world. It's so hard to imagine. And here we are, the epicenter in the United States is in New York City.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been so controversial about the masks in general. We do know that the virus is airborne in droplets as well. So if you can contain the spread of the virus, then, you know, then you can control the virus. Because this virus needs a host, and we're the host. So if you don't get infected and don't get exposed, then the virus will ultimately die. And that's the goal. That's why we had the whole wash your hands, stay home, try not to be out and about. With the issue with the mask and, you know, the N95s versus cloth versus bandanas versus all the other ways of covering your mouth and your face so that you don't emit the virus if you're a carrier, or you don't inhale it if you're an unfortunate victim. You know, so much controversy has been around it because this has really just been an evolving disease. We're understanding a little bit more about how it is contagious, how it is transmitted. So at this point, the safest thing, obviously, is to stay indoors if you can stay indoors, and wash your hands if you've been out and about. Wash and bleach or sanitize your surfaces, again, to hopefully minimize those spores or, you know, that virus to get back into the circulation. Now, if you do go out and about, because you don't have to have symptoms to spread the virus, meaning you could be a healthy carrier, by covering your face, potentially you will protect your other, your family members or your friends, your people that you walk on the street, people that pass by you, or if you're picking up things at the grocery store, helps to decrease the spread of the virus. Now, does it protect you per se from getting it yourself? It's hard to say. But I'd like to think that at least you reduce some of your risk for it, especially if you take that bandana off at home or the mask and you wash it with soap and water so that, you know, you don't inhale it back in. Or if you wear the mask, you know, you make sure that you don't put the mask on inside out so that you wind up breathing the spores again. But again, you know, the virus will only live as long as it can go from host to host to host. So if you can break that chain of the virus moving from one person to the other, then you can, then that virus dies, and then we have a leveling off of our numbers. So we do have documentation that quarantining, lockdown, social distancing works, and just people need to actually do it. And that's the hardest thing. And it's interesting. Your biggest contribution is to not go out and about and just stay home. It seems easier said than done. I think if you live out in the suburbs where you do have your own space, that probably is a little bit more tolerable. And I understand in New York City, where most of us live in apartments, you can get a little cabin fever and having tight quarters. But, you know, keeping yourself entertained, use this time to better yourself, use this time for self-care, use this time to do projects that you didn't have time to do because you had to go to work or you were out with friends and family. And then, you know, just use this time for some positivity. I mean, this is such a terrible time. All we can do is flip it into something better. Because, you know, what we get back to is probably not going to be the normal that we've always been used to. It's going to become the new normal. So why not, you know, get out there with the newer, better you?
Thank you, Doctor. We're listening to Lisa Ganju, who's a doctor at NYU Langone. Thank you so much for being here. She's going to stay with us till 1 p.m., so another half hour. We're also joined by Anne Sansevero, who is a registered nurse as well as founder and CEO of HealthSense, an aging life care management consulting practice. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Sri. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. Tell us how you are, where you're calling from, and you've been listening to this conversation. What are your thoughts so far?
So a lot of what your other physician speaker resonates with me. I have an aging life care practice in New York City, and I have a number of clients that, you know, my average age of my clients are between 80 and 100 years of age. And so we've been very, very busy in the early part of March preparing for this. You know, and then, you know, getting stocks in place, getting, you know, care workers, consolidating shifts, that kind of thing. And now we're riding this out. But it's very, very, it's tough times. It's sad times. It's strong times. It's extraordinary times. That's the only way to describe it. It's unprecedented, but I see so much strength and resilience in the human spirit. The hardest part for me is when we have to stop seeing our clients and going managing them virtually, and that's been really tough. So we're using technology to the best that we can there, and then we're supporting the front lines of the home caregivers and triaging issues, dealing with, you know, caregivers that may think they need to isolate or quarantine so that, you know, they don't infect their charges, and dealing with symptom management. So it's been nonstop.
Thank you, Anne, and God bless you for what you're doing. Tell us an aging life care practice and dealing with 80 to 100-year-old patients, clients, must be so hard, and especially at this time where people are so worried and so scared.
It is. We did, do a lot of anticipatory planning. When I first saw that, you know, I was following along with what was happening in China. And when I heard, you know, that this was a novel virus, I knew that that this could get bad. And when I saw that it was, you know, a droplet transmission, that was tough. And then a new virus droplet transmission. So, you know, we tried to educate and get out ahead of it as fast as we could. So as CEO of the company, I did a lot of educating of our workers. We got gloves and masks into the home. We stockpiled medications. We, as more and more information came out, we talked to families about organizing special transport for the workers to reduce their exposure. We talked about, you know, getting those medications in the home before they got scarce, which I'm forever grateful. We got the Tylenol in, we got the anti-fever medication, we got a month, 6 weeks of supplies, and then we... As things started tightening up and we realized we wouldn't be able to go to the homes anymore, we were on our city bikes, you know, literally doing our last top-ups of medications before we then realized that we can't go into the home. It's really – so now what we're doing is, you know, for those families that, you know, are needing – you know, there's some clients of mine that I've had to make hospice referrals to, which is, you know, really, really sad. But, there is, a great hospice services available, and if they are going to pass in their homes and they've, you know, got symptoms, at least they're going to pass with dignity, with comfort, and that. I do have clients also that are in independent living facilities or assisted living facilities, and that's pretty difficult for the families. They can't go visit them, and that's especially isolating for those seniors. So we've done a lot of FaceTime. I have a cognitive enrichment division with my company where I have two amazing cognitive enrichment specialists, and they get on the Zoom calls with some of my clients, and they have virtual concert hours. They dress up with them, and they do armchair travel with them to different countries, and they do reminiscence, and they play checkers online. So we're really doing some exciting, nice, wonderful social things with our clients, too, to try and get them through this period.
Thank you. Dr. Lisa Ganju is listening and with us, and Ann Sansevero, thank you, both of you. Dr. Lisa, as you hear this story of these older patients, how are you feeling?
Yeah, the older folks, unfortunately, don't do so well with this disease. And that's what we had thought initially before we knew more about the virus, that it was affecting mostly the older folks. But, you know, they're reserved. They just don't have the reserve to fight the fight, unfortunately. Granted, we do have a few survivors that we see on the news, and which is always so heartwarming to hear. But a majority of the older folks tend not to do so well. So we really need to protect that population with kit gloves. And, you know, Anne's doing some great work with trying to keep those folks healthy and, you know, help them out with what they need, what their needs are. And, you know, they were right. Basically pre-planning and kind of really stocking up ahead of time is really what will help get through this.
Thank you. Folks, please continue to call in. If the lines are busy, please keep trying. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And where do you find the strength from to deal with this? So many of us would be broken by having to deal with our friends and our people we work with and work for in such trouble.
So, Sree, it's the why I get up in the morning. It's part of the nursing DNA, and it's just such an honor to work with older populations. They're my people. They're so resilient. They have amazing stories to tell. I've seen, you know, they're underestimated as a group. I actually have one client that I treated as, you know, likely COVID positive, and he came out the other end and is doing wonderfully. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom in this sector. There is some amazing resilience. And, you know, the main thing I think is that you keep true to what their wishes are and how they want to spend their time. So that if things, you know, we'll do what we can do. A lot of my clients are based in their own homes. So we have almost like a medical home set up. I have amazing collaborative relationships with their physicians, with their caregivers, and what we do is basically honor their wishes. So if we have, you know, a client that is not doing well or is having symptoms, is not responding to the treatments that we do, you know, we are going to basically, you know, try and make that the time that they have left as meaningful as possible. On the other hand, if you know, they're doing, they're getting through, they're supporting, they're fighting, we're going to help them along that journey as well. So it's just a lot of different scenarios, but the main thing is staying true to their wishes and what they want. And, you know, I think also it's really, it brings to mind, I had a lot of conversations, Sri, with families about MOLDS forms. You know, these are the medical orders for life-sustaining treatments. And, you know, they're a lot more specific than, you know, a DNR, DNI, but they talk about, you know, would you want, what kind of care would you like if you were, you know, would you want to be hospitalized in this environment? And, of course, a lot of my clients now would not want to be hospitalized in this environment. So, again, we're bringing the care and medicine to them as much as we can. And, you know, great recommended reading on this kind of topic is Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. And I've also had families that, you know, they've said, I'm not sure what mom and dad want. You know, we've never really thought that deeply about it. I've been afraid to go there emotionally. One resource I shared with them is the Conversation Project, which is theconversationproject.org. It's a great way to just have these meaningful conversations about what kind of care would you like, you know, if things, you know, if you know, the end of life or there are end of life issues to discuss, what would that look like? And it's important to have in these times.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Just you're our registered nurse. I'd want to give a shout out to all the nurses who are working so hard for all of us. And sometimes because some doctors are allowed to speak on camera or they have private practice, so they are able to be seen more often than nurses, where hospitals might control what they say, and we don't get to see as many of them, but they're working so hard for all of us, aren't they?
They are. They are the cornerstone of care in all our patients, and they really deserve the respect and honor that they deserve.
Thank you. We have a caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Tell us your name and where you're calling from, please.
My name is Irving, and I'm calling from Manhattan.
Thank you, Irving. How are you?
Okay, and first I want to thank you for putting on a program of this kind. I wish it would be on more than once a week.
Now, thank you. Very kind.
Now, my question relates to surfaces. Now, I've heard that the virus can linger on a metal surface for 2 days. But I haven't heard anything about groceries when you have something from the supermarket. Does that have to be cleaned, or how long will the virus stay on a box or the paper bag that the groceries come in?
Thank you, Irving. Thank you for your call. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. We're glad you're connecting with the world. We can be physically distant, but we can be socially connected in all these ways. Thank you. I'll let both Anne and Lisa answer, but I will say that I have been watching many experts on television who've said you have to treat anything coming into your home as if it is contaminated with the virus, and therefore you have to make sure you wipe it down, and you, if you don't have to consume it right away, keep it aside. And then wipe it down before you put it in the fridge, and certainly before you put anything in your mouth. At our home, we have kind of an assembly line where one person brings in the food, the other person cleans it, and then it's put away. And that's because we have the luxury of four, you know, almost adults in one house. Let me ask Lisa and then Anne to comment on this.
The virus is viable outside the human body, so in aerosolized, in the air, it lasts up to 3 hours. Copper is about 4 hours. Cardboard is about 24 hours. And unfortunately, plastics and stainless steel can be up to 2 to 3 days, which is quite frightening, honestly. But that's where your assembly line tree works. You really just need to wipe everything down, clean things off before you actually bring them in your home. I've anecdotally heard people who, you know, have cars or you live in the suburbs, whatever they can leave outside in their garage in their car, they will leave there for a day or so, but bring the perishables in, but make sure they immediately wash it. And then again, anytime you're going to put anything in your mouth, make sure you wash your hands. make sure you wash your hands whenever you come in from outside as well. You know, taking a little, like a bleach Clorox wipe or something to the carton of anything you bring in should suffice to keep things clean. Again, it's important to clean things before you put them into your cupboards.
Thank you. And your thoughts?
Fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I would echo that. My little superpower when I go have to go out to the grocery store is I take a glove with me and I put a Lysol wipe in the glove. And at least I'm able, or two, and I'm wiping everything as I go along. I'm wearing my mask, and then I have my spray when I'm, you know, I'll spray down everything, let it dry, and then remove things, and then wash and wipe, as we say. And then after that, I try and say, okay, I've done the best I can, because, you know, we are so, all of us going through these anxious times, we have to do the best we can and then live our lives, because we can't always live in a place of fear either. As long as you do best practices and you make it a routine, it will get easier and easier. It'll be, as Lisa said, the new normal. Until we don't have to do this. And so practice makes perfect. If you forgot to do something, don't beat up on yourself. Just keep trying and just get into that habit.
Yes. As a follow-up on that, the disinfectant that I have says kills 99% of bacteria, but it says nothing about viruses.
Thank you. Lisa, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, so that's actually a very good point. We do know that soap and water helps to kind of wash this away. I think, again, just like what Anne was saying, you just have to have good faith that you're doing your best to wipe things down and remove them from the surfaces of your packaging. But, yeah, I mean, we haven't really thought much about viruses, but bacteria, virus, parasites, all of those things can definitely wreak havoc on our body. And again, you know, using a disinfectant the best we can is, you know, all we can do. And again, Anne did it, worded it so well that, you know, all you can do is do the best you can and just don't beat yourself up about everything else. Because doing something is better than doing nothing.
Fine. Thank you very much for your help on this.
Thank you, Irving, and thanks for listening. Really appreciate you. Folks, you're listening to a conversation with Dr. Lisa Ganju and Anne Sansevero. They're both on Twitter. Dr. Lisa is at Dr. Lisa Ganju, G-A-N-J-H-U, Dr. Lisa Ganju. And Anne is on Twitter at HealthSense, LLC, at HealthSense, LLC. Thank you so much to both of you for being here, for taking these questions. And tell me about what has surprised you the most in these 3-4 weeks that we've been in New York City going through everything we've gone through. And I'll ask the same question of Dr. Lisa.
What has surprised me? Life goes on. I've had, you know, right now I'm doing some triaging with my clients, and I had a new client that I had to virtually do a discharge on from hospital, which was very difficult. And this client had a lot of comorbidities, was very ill, had been in the ICU, but his family desperately wanted him home. They did not want him in a subacute facility. So I worked with his family to try and coordinate care for him at home. He had been tested for COVID twice, and he was COVID negative. So everything was going well at home, and then he suddenly developed really bad abdominal pain. And it was really tough to try and triage this, but I did the best I could under the circumstances. And we determined that the gentleman had a very acute abdomen. So the hardest thing for me was to recommend for him to go back into the hospital. He did not want to go back into the hospital. His family did not want him to go back into the hospital. But I knew that it was, I had, to the best of my abilities, I knew that this was going to be not being able to be managed at home. He turned out, he took an Uber down with his caregiver, and he ended up having a ruptured duodenal ulcer. He was operated on that night, and he survived and in an ICU now. So that to me shows that there are other medical issues going on, and where everything we think is COVID, 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 it's not all COVID. There are other medical issues going on that need attention, but people are so fearful of going into the hospital And they have to know that, you know, those emergencies can be treated as well. And we don't want people not to go for those emergencies that can be treated, that they can survive from. And I would ask Lisa's input for that, because I'm sure she might be seeing some of this also.
Yes, absolutely. I think we're forgetting that people still have other issues, other medical issues other than the COVID infection. And we were talking about this the other day, myself and my colleagues, about all the routine stuff that we were seeing. All of a sudden, we're not seeing it anymore. And I think it becomes like patients have more of a fear of being into the hospital, which is, you know, understandable, and it's not unreasonable. But I just do hope that they are reaching out for medical care. If they, reaching out to their primary care doctors, some have reverted into telemedicine, so make sure you keep your appointments, because those chronic care issues still need to be addressed. It's interesting that you say that. We noticed that also, that, the stuff that we used to see, we're not seeing, because there's just so much of this COVID-related hospitalizations. I have to just urge patients to make sure that if they do have any chronic issues, that they don't ignore them. And if they have follow-up, you know, speak with their primary care doctors or their specialists, because we're all starting to ramp up our telemedicine practices pretty much all over, so that we can still take care of our patients remotely. As far as your other question, Sri, about what surprised you, I think it's the resilience and just the humankind, honestly. I mean, the outpouring of appreciation and people just rolling up their sleeves and helping in any way they can. Even businesses that have shuttered their restaurants, bars, they're all repurposing themselves in order to help maintain their bottom dollar. And we as consumers, you know, we can't go to restaurants or our favorite places to hang out, but we can still order from them. We can still get gift certificates or buy gift certificates. So there's some money coming into those restaurants, and then use those restaurants once we get back to our new normal. So I think the resilience, the readaptability, the repurposing, as I said, I am a gastroenterologist, but I was repurposed into someone that was doing general medicine and COVID medicine, I guess we were calling it, because all of those skills were deep inside our brains, and we had to just kind of bring that all up out. And I wasn't doing any GI, I was doing respiratory medicine and infectious disease medicine, because we're just there to help, and we can come to terms with, you know, our limitations and our strengths, and really forge forward.
So thank you. We have another caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Tell us where you're from and tell us your name, please.
Yes, I'm from Brentwood, Long Island. Brad.
You're on the air on WBAI. Hi, Brad. Maybe we can turn down your radio in the back. We love hearing WBAI through the voices of all our listeners are throughout the New York area. And a reminder to everyone, WBAI needs your help. WBAI is radio for the 99%. Unlike commercial radio, we have no rich corporations or sponsors, no deep well of corporate support. So become a member. You can go to WBAI.org and donate. There's a donate button, and any amount of money will help shows like this and others stay on the air. Hi, Brad. Tell us your question.
Yes, how you doing? I don't have a question. I want to just remind everybody, if we're working on immunity and trying to fight this, one of the most important things, there are things like vitamin C and zinc and on, without laboring it, and I'll keep it real short. We're staying home, our schedule's different, but what is key to immunity is rest, good rest. And if you stay up late and watch a show that you don't normally stay up, okay. But remember, rest is that important. And if you do or you lose some sleep, take naps or go to bed earlier or something that gives you better rest. And even relaxation, such as meditation or just calming tea. That's it. Please,
what a great call, Brad. Thank you. And telling us to rest, I think, is so important. We really appreciate it. I know the doctor will say absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, rest, making sure you eat healthy, exercise, relaxation, any kind of mind-body thing to just reduce your own inner cortisol. All of those things are going to help with your immunity.
Yeah, and unfortunately, people will do a lot of that, but then they'll short themselves on rest, and it's like a foundation. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. What a great caller, and we really appreciate everybody who's calling in. We are going to continue the second hour of this show. I'm going to see if our guests can stick around for a couple more minutes, and I want to get a thought from Dr. Lisa before we let her go, and I'm going to ask Anne to stay around for part of the second hour if she can. We got her in late into the call. Go ahead, Lisa. Please give us some final messages for everybody.
All right. So I guess my final thoughts on everything would be do your part, wash your hands, social distance, stay home, be kind, order in, tip heavy. Stay bonded with your friends and family through texting, calling, FaceTime, Zooming, whatever it is. I myself think I've strengthened a lot of my bonds by staying in touch with friends and families during this time. Zoom is now my favorite app. We've been able to do family reunions, been catching up with friends and family. And, you know, again, this is a terrible time, but all we can do is make what's positive a positive and get through this, because we will get through this eventually. This will end. It will be sad before it's happy, for sure. But we'll get through it. We'll get through this together as a society.
Dr. Lisa Ganju, what wonderful advice. We will get through this. It won't all be happy, but we will be happy again. But meanwhile, we will suffer. But we will. It's so helpful to have useful factual information from Dr. Lisa Ganju. You can follow her on Twitter. She's at NYU Langone, GANJHU. And Dr. Lisa is going to be on my other show on tomorrow morning, between 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. tomorrow. I read the Sunday New York Times on my Facebook and Twitter feed. So you can find me there at Sri on Twitter. And she's going to join us for half an hour and take questions again. So thank you so much, Dr. Lisa. We wish you the very best. Please get some rest.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed my time with you all. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. And Anne, you're going to stick around. We're going to pause for a minute, listen to some music, and we're going to come right back. Thank you.
Sure, Sri. Thank you.
Se me corta la respiración. Cuando tú me miras, se me sube el corazón.
Me palpita lento el corazón.
Y en un silencio, tu mirada dice mil palabras. La noche en la que te suplico que no salga el sol.
Bailando. latidos aceleran a mi corazón.
That's that song, Bailando, that we love, the 2014 hit by Enrique Iglesias. The title means dancing, and I hope there'll be some in our beloved New York City in the months ahead. For now, that seems a long way away. You're tuned to WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. I'm Sri Srinivasan with Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful show. It's a call-in show. We want to hear from you. Tweet us at Sri, S-R-E-E, at W-B-A-I, and the hashtag W-B-A-I Sri. Call us at 212-209-2877. We want to hear from you. We'll discuss various aspects of the crisis in this show. We're on for 2 hours every Saturday, noon to two. This is our second hour, and today we're focused on the medical aspects of the crisis, healthcare aspects. We have two guests. Anne Sansevero continues her presence with us. Anne is a registered nurse and the founder and CEO of HealthSense, an aging life care management consulting practice. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you, Sri. Thanks for having me.
And we're now joined by a doctor who's with us from Missouri. Please welcome Dr. Amit Chakrabarty, who's president of Poplar Bluff Urology. Hi, Amit.
Hey, how are you, Sri? Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for being here. Tell us where you are. Tell us how you're doing, how you're feeling.
Well, we're in Missouri, and we have not hit the peak. New York, obviously, is the epicenter at this time. And we expect to get our peak within the next week or 10 days. We have obviously started seeing our COVID cases. We have got our resources geared up and helping to provide PPEs to all the healthcare workers in the front line, and doing proactively several things. We have got an Indian Physicians Organization, which represents more than 100,000 physicians in the country, called API, which is American Association of Physicians of Indian Origin, the largest ethnic medical organization and second largest medical organization in the country, next to AMA. So we are gearing up to actually get this cutting-edge technologies or cutting-edge life-saving measures to be available to the people who are suffering, who are in the ICU, who are on a vent, one of them being infusion of plasma from recovered COVID patients. I'll be glad to take any questions regarding that, because that is the only thing which has been absolutely proven to be effective. I mean, there are other antiviral things which are also helpful, but there are, this is one thing which I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Amit. You're on Twitter, so we'll tell people that they can find you there as well, at UCNADR, UCNADR, Urology Clinics of North Alabama, DR. So thank you. Let me ask our friend Anne, who's with us, Anne Sansevero. Anne, what are your thoughts on what you just heard about plasma? And just people are promoting all kinds of things. The White House is promoting something. How do you tell your patients, especially because the people you work with are so much older, 80 to 100 years old, as you said, your average client? How are you telling them about these hopeful and sometimes not so hopeful medical options?
For the most part, Sri, we're trying to keep in the preventative mode with my folks. So I've been really focusing on prevention and trying to do best practices around them. Of course, a lot of them are reading up on technologies, and of course, different aspects of what treatment options there might be, including, you know, some of the medications that might be helpful or not, but so little is known. And I think until we know more, it's doing them a disservice until we actually hear what works. I am very encouraged about the plasma option, though, that the doctor has just mentioned. You know, having come from a neurology background as a neurology nurse practitioner, I know the value of, you know, I remember having, you know, worked with things like plasmapheresis or the washing of the blood and having, knowing that there is an autoimmune, you know, there's a component where you can actually clean the blood or give treatments through plasma that are very, very encouraging. So while my knowledge in this area is not as deep as the doctor's, I'm very, very encouraged by what I'm hearing in that area. That gives me the most hope with regard to everything else I've heard in terms of the medical part of it.
Thank you. And for those of you who want to be in touch with the doctor, he's online. His website is amitforaapi.com, amitforaapi.com. Dr. Amit's in St. Louis. And let's take some questions. Folks, if you're calling in, we'd love to give you a chance to talk to Dr. Amit and to Anne. Our phone number is 212-209-2877. You're on the air right now. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Okay, Joseph DeVere. I'm calling from the Bronx, New York.
Thank you. Hello? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, someone who's an expert technician who would like to offer his service voluntarily on this crisis, to whom to call on phone number.
Thank you. Doctor, do you have any idea what a volunteer X-ray technologist can do for us?
Volunteer X-ray, I mean, that obviously, they are looking for all kinds of people in different healthcare facilities to help, and just reach out to your local community hospitals. All of them are looking for anyone who can come in, pitch in, and help. In fact, even residents in training are being requested to go to the front line, especially in hard-hit areas like New York and New Jersey. So, yes, please contact your local hospital and see and offer them your service.
Thank you, and thank you for your call. We appreciate everybody who's
listening.
Well,
again, excuse me, again, that's what I don't know, because I'm in the Bronx. I call the Bronx, Lebanon. I call Truth Hospital in the Bronx. They're in the air. Also, they told me to go online. In a crisis like this, you ask me to go online when I'm offering my service voluntarily.
Thank you. And doctor, I know this can be frustrating for folks at this time, and I'm sure you see this as well. People are trying to get services, or they're trying to get things, and they have to told to go online to find information. What do you tell folks at this moment at a crisis like this?
So I would just say, first of all, sir, the fact that you're offering help and reaching out, it's an amazing thing, and it goes to what we talk about as getting together as a community to help one another. So if you're finding that your actual services as an X-ray technician are not being taken up on right away, there are other things you could do. Certainly there are volunteers needed for, in my population, to be able to shop for older people, deliver groceries to homebound elders, to help make phone calls, so that if there's an area in your building, actually, that you know that there's stay-at-home seniors or seniors that are sheltering in place that are fearful of going out, knowing that there's somebody there in their building that could help them help them with procuring groceries and food, and also just the connection, calling them, talking with them, saying, hey, my name is so-and-so. I'm in your building. I know you're not getting out very much. I just wanted to touch base and see how you're doing. I'd like to, you know, just be part of a volunteer network. I know in our building, in our apartment building, we have, you know, a number of us who have, you know, volunteered to help out and do grocery shopping and that. So even if your X-ray technology skills are not being used right now, your human skills will always come in use.
And we have a phone number for you, sir. If you can write this down, everybody who's listening, please write this down. This is about the New York City Medical Reserve Corps, And there are immediate openings at NYC Medical Reserve Corps for surge staffing cell operations. This position will provide technical assistance to volunteers during the registration process, assign volunteers to healthcare facilities based on the needs assessment, and manage shift schedules for volunteers. If you're interested in this, please call this number. I'm giving this to all of you, 718-422-3001. I'll give it again in a few minutes. 718-422-3001. Sorry?
You said 718-422.
3001. Thank you, sir, for calling from the Bronx. Thank you for
3001.
Yes, thank you very much. And there's also an email address that we will be giving in a few minutes. And please go to 311. You can call 311 and ask as well. And you can go to nyc.gov. There's a lot of information there just on the COVID virus. And I want to go to Dr. Amit calling in from St. Louis. Thank you for being with us, Doc. Tell us about what has surprised you the most in this time that you've seen the country in lockdown for almost a month now.
Well, a few things. Initially, we didn't take it that seriously, as you know, but then we suddenly we were kind of jolted into reality, seeing what's happening in Italy and Spain. Bottom line is that this virus, let me give you perspectives about this virus. This virus has only a 3% mortality. So it's a lot less virulent than the Ebola and the other SARS, those viruses which we had in the past. However, the problem is the infectivity of this virus is really, really high. And that makes it so much more potentially dangerous that it can spread really rapidly and infect large amounts of population, and then it causes people to have respiratory problems, and we see large amounts of people succumbing to this. So that was what was very surprising. As you know, our government tried to downplay it initially because of what we heard from China, but then we realized that, hey, this is a lot more going on. I would actually advocate really a lockdown in the whole United States for about 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know whether New York or any other state is on lockdown. I understand there's some federal legality issue here, but that is what a lot of other countries have done that and benefited from that. Okay.
Thank you, Doctor. That's very helpful. Can you just very quickly clarify what's the difference between infectivity and the fatality rate? What does that mean, and how does it help us understand what we're doing? Doc, did you hear that question?
Sorry, repeat that. Sorry,
The question was the difference between the infectivity, the infection rate, and the fatality rate, and what is the correlation there, and the difference between them?
Difference between them is that there's a denominator here. So basically, though you have got a 3% mortality rate, okay, you've got 3% mortality rate. But if more people are infected, that 3% computes to a larger number. For example, Ebola was not that infective. So though it had a 50% mortality rate, it did not spread as fast. And that's why we could really contain it to Africa, really. We didn't see too many cases here. So that is the difference between the infectivity ratio makes the denominator large, consequently the mortality high, the numbers high, just based on the denominator.
Thank you. That's very helpful. We have a caller joining us on WBAI. You're on the air. Tell us where you're from and tell us who you are.
Yes, I'm Lee from the East Village. I'm a retired dietitian, with MS, and I believe I heard somebody say they were a neurologist. I was wondering, and also with eye issues, glaucoma, cataracts, and I was wondering if it would be all right on sunny days. I mean, I have a history in my family of respiratory, but I don't myself have anything going on at the moment. However, I find that I'm more susceptible to colds with this, but I can't take as much vitamin C because apparently the body with MS sees vitamin C as a foreign agent that it should fight against. So I was just wondering if there was something that you could recommend it. Also, if this affects people with MS in any unusual way. And also about the pollution at the in the air. This is correlated anyway. If the pollution is binding in congested areas like New York.
Thank you for that question, series of questions. Dr. Amit, how much can you say about the question she had? Dr. Amit, can you hear me?
Can you direct the call to, I've got a call from the ER. Let me take the call.
No, please take that call. Let's go to Anne. Thank you, doc. You'll come back and say hello whenever you're ready. Thank you. Anne. As you were hearing those questions, can you respond, please?
So, in terms of vitamin C, I mean, if it's, I have not heard that vitamin C is contraindicated with MS. Now, I'm a neurology nurse practitioner. I have not practiced directly in that particular field for 15 years, and I've been doing my care management with my elderly clients. But if you're worried about the intake, have you been told that, I'm interested with the caller, has she been told not to take it in by food? Because I don't see why, unless there's a contraindication with the medicines, why taking vitamin C in through grapefruit or juices or that kind of thing can't help. I know that in this particular pandemic, the doctors are recommending, you know, vitamin C, thiamine, zinc, and you know, these are all known to, you know, help the immune system. So if there is some contraindication, to taking vitamin C, I would say, you know, take your vitamin B complex, take your zinc, take your thiamine. Those can certainly help.
Thiamine. Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank
and
you
vitamin B complex as well.
Yes.
And I would also say, ma'am, that, you know, as eating a healthy diet as well, you know, getting your dietary intake of these vitamins, this is important, you know, looking for the natural ways to get these vitamins in as well, if you can. But that's the current thinking on the vitamin supplementation with this to make your immune system strong. And as our earlier caller mentioned, getting your rest, alleviating your stress, decreasing those cortisol levels, getting that time to, you know, meditate or spiritually connect every day to give your, you know, give you that extra boost, all play a role in helping with your immune system.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne, and thank you to the caller. We wish you the very best with your health, as we wish everyone who's listening good health through this crisis. I think, Anne, it'd be fair to say one of the things people can do is stay out of the hospitals for anything that isn't an emergency. I tell my kids, we can't take you to the hospital. Don't cut your hand with a knife. Don't break your leg. Don't do anything that puts you, adds strain to the healthcare system right now.
Hey, Sri, I am back, but I have to go for a torsion testicle in the ER. So these are the emergencies, a few emergencies where we are still in the, though I'm a urologist and don't deal with COVID cases directly, but we have to take care of emergencies. So
of course, doctor. Thank you so much, folks. You're hearing this live. The doctor got an emergency call for a non-COVID case, but he has to go. We appreciate you, Dr. Amit Chakrabarty, president at Poplar Bluff Urology, calling in from St. Louis. We wish you the very best. We hope you'll join us on a future show. Everyone, check out his website, amit4aapi.com. Thank you so much, doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sri. I'm sorry that I have to be allowed. Okay.
No, we understand completely. Please be safe. Anne, I hope we can have you on for a little while longer as we continue this conversation. We were just saying, Anne, we don't want you to go to the ER. Don't get in trouble. What do you say?
That's exactly right. You really have to think very, very carefully about some of the activities you're doing. You know, even if you're going out to exercise, now is not the time to sprain an ankle or do those kind of things that are going to take you into the emergency room system. So, you know, the staying at home and staying well are really paramount at this time. I do tell my, you know, I am, as I said earlier, as an aging life care professional, I do a lot of triaging as a nurse practitioner and nurse care manager. I do triaging over the phone. Whatever we can do to avoid that ER visit, that's what we need to do right now. We need to stay out of that system as much as we can, absolutely. And Sri, one thing that I'm doing, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but I'm using some software, interesting software right now that I'm doing monitoring of my clients with. It's a system called Mind You, and they are an AI-based platform. And they allow me to make telephone calls to my clients, and the software actually monitors the client's voice patterns, not their actual content, but the patterns of the voice to detect healthcare changes. So I'm trying some new technologies in this time of COVID-19 to try better keep an eye on my clients, and it can tell me by the end of the call if they're at baseline or whether there are anomalies. Now, this technology is very new. I'm just trialing it right now, but I think that these are things in the future that could potentially be very useful in our toolkit if they're proven effective.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anne. Let's look at that website. It's MindYou, spelled MindYou.com, and it says join the cognitive care revolution. MindYou.com. So let's break that down a little bit. It's an AIT technology app to detect changes in voices as a way to determine changes in a person's health. That sounds like magic.
Well, you know, in terms of overall, when you're looking at people's neurological function, there are subtle changes in voice prosodity. And I remember when I was first listening to the presentation with this group, they were able to tell you that as people's cognition worsened, their voice patterns change. And sometimes that can be a lot more subtle than other things. And they gave an example, you know, our former President Ronald Reagan and what his voice pattern and prosodity was like in the first part of his service and then what it was like in the second part of his reign in terms of a president, that second term. His voice was very different, and they were able to show on their software the different prosodity changes. Now, these are very subtle changes, and the AI apparently platform picks up these. They're also working on an app that also will pick up types of movements in the way people walk and sleep patterns. And so this is really cutting-edge stuff. Again, it's, you know, it's in its, I think, early stages, but I think there could be some real utility to it if it's effective. And I'm in the process, as I said, right now in trialing it, and I haven't gotten any major anomalies with my clients yet, but I will be very interested to see if it does correlate clinically with something that's going on. And our Aging Life Care Association, which I'm a member of, our nonprofit organization, we've had conversations with this group who's a corporate partner, and you know, if a few of us are seeing some good correlations, we may, you know, indeed work with them on a research trial. But it's early days yet. But I'm excited to be able to at least, you know, whatever I can do that could be an added adjunct to help me monitor remotely, I think, during these times especially is useful.
Thank you, Anne. The organization you mentioned, aginglifecare.org, aginglifecare.org. The experts in aging well, and that you have a lot of information there, so people may want to check that out. We have a couple of callers who we're going to bring on in just a second, but Anne, what is your advice at this moment for someone who is listening? They have older parents. The people you work with are between 80 and 100 years old. What are some things that I should be doing with my parents right now if they're in the 70-plus age group that will be helpful to them and helpful to me and my children in kind of dealing with the crises that we're all going to face at some point down the line?
Sri, that's a great question. I would say preparation. You know, if you have, if you do preparation in advance, when a crisis does come along, it's easier to manage. So whether it's preparing, you know, your advance directives, your healthcare wishes, your power of attorneys, how you're managing your finances, having your paperwork in order, having a disaster plan as a family, what happens if this happens? Because it's so much easier to respond when you are coming from a place of preparedness. And as an aging life care professional, that's what we do help families a lot with. And a lot of my clients, you know, we, I'm not going to say this is an easy time for us, but it was easier having done the preparation ahead of time. So I would say at this time now for families to just think, you know, even if things have been running smoothly with your parents, think about what it might be like if this next wave happens. What would you have done differently with this knowledge in place? You know, doing that anticipatory, having that checklist done in terms of what you would prepare or store. You know, you would have their medication lists, you would have their contact numbers, you would have a system of who's going to be connecting with mom or dad during this time, and what if that system didn't work, what's our backup? I just wrote a blog actually recently on my website called An Ounce of Prevention is Worth a Ton of Cure, and that's what I would say to the families. Use this time now to plan for the future. It will be time very, very well spent.
Thank you. Great advice, and I hope everyone listening will think about planning. Now, we have a caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Please tell us where you're calling from and tell us your name.
Brooklyn. The name is Ray.
Hi, Ray.
I was happy to hear your guest recommending and passing on the doctor's recommend vitamins, including and especially vitamin C, because that's what I do. In other words, this, the victim mentality and the fact that all the advice we hear is only about how to not spread the virus is amazing to me. I defend myself by boosting my immune system. I have a birth defect for millions of years where the four enzymes in my liver that used to convert glucose into ascorbic acid no longer work. I think I share that birth defect with every human being on Earth, and guinea pigs and apes. And a goat, a medium-sized goat, like 100 pounds, would make 40,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C in its liver. So I take at least 40,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C, and I have titrated to bowel tolerance over years and decades so that I can do that. I've taken 100,000 milligrams a day when I need it, because, of course, your body tells you when you need it by allowing you to take that much and retain it. And I do not clog the emergency room of the hospital. It wouldn't cost me a penny, but I do not visit allopathic MDs. I'm not interested in treating symptoms. I'm only interested in curing things and preventing things. I'm not interested in treating them chronically. We have a problem. And as I brought up last
thank you for sharing your thoughts and thank you for talking about how you're staying out of the ER. And what is your guidance on vitamins?
So again, I would just say that, you know, sir, you mentioned that you take large amounts of vitamins. I would caution against, you know, taking mega doses. I think the dose that's recommended in these instances is 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. But obviously, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do in terms of what, as you mentioned, your body. But that I would go with the recommended dose, because I'm not sure. There has been a lot of controversy about mega doses of vitamins. That being said, sir, I totally agree with you in the power of using our vitamins to boost our immune system. I'm a great believer of trying to take the vitamins naturally if we can as well through excellent diet and food and nutrition. because when we take the vitamins through that way, we also get other added benefits by eating right. So, again, you're doing your part to keep your immune system strong. I commend you and stay well and healthy.
Thank you, Anne. Folks, you're listening to Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. My name is Sri Srinivasan. Thank you so much for being here. We are here every Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can catch us on WBAI.org or on WBAI 99.5 FM. My Twitter handle is at Sri, S-R-E-E, at WBAI, and the hashtag WBAISREE. Our phone number is 212-209-2877. We want to hear from you. And I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about nurses. You're a registered nurse. You have the DNA of a nurse. Tell me what gets people into nursing. What gets people continuing to go into places that are so difficult and dangerous when everyone else is running away as a nurse?
Sri, that's a great question. Nurses have this inherent want to connect with people. We really connect with people deep in the humanity part of the role in terms of human to human. We're always right there, you know, front lines, front contact. We're there for the emotional component. We're there for the social component as well as for the medical component. So there's kind of a holistic quality to being a nurse. It's almost like seeing a larger picture of somebody so that we can understand a lot of different spheres. So when somebody is not feeling well or is not ill, we're not just looking at, well, what's wrong with the body? We're also looking at, well, what's going on with the mind? What's going on emotionally? What's going on around that greater human sphere of humanity for that person? And that's what really drew me into nursing, because we were able to touch in all of those areas. And in this particular crisis, it really does resonate. Our roles resonate because we are dealing with the emotional and the social and the medical and all of that and the ripple effects out. So this is a very natural role, I think, for nurses right now. And that's why you're seeing so many of the amazing nurses across this country step up and shine right now. And it's just so gratifying, actually, to get the recognition for our role, because we're so used to being in the background, kind of keeping things going. And to have a light shone on this amazing profession, to me, is just a beacon in this dark time, because nurses contribute on so many levels and in so many ways.
And that's, I think, partly because of pop culture, that we don't know enough about nurses, right? They're not always shown in the best light. They're always kind of second fiddle to the doctors. And, you know, so a lot of that has to do with movies and popular culture. But I think this crisis, as you said, is shining a better light on what is happening. Can you talk about where you went to nursing school? And if someone was listening today and they feel that calling, what should they do? And if someone's scared about going into nursing, what should they be thinking about?
So my story is, I'm an immigrant. I went to nursing school in Ireland, and I, at the time, there was just diploma programs available. You couldn't have a baccalaureate degree. So I finished my nursing diploma in Ireland. And at the time, when I finished it, there was a big crisis going on here in the United States. And that was in the year of the 80s, and we had the AIDS crisis. And they were looking for nurses all over. So Ireland was one country that the U.S. heavily recruited on. And so I came over as a nurse in the AIDS crisis to work in the United States. And as I ended up in the coronary care units, and I was a critical care nurse. And this country was very good to me. I came over in a visa, and then I was asked to stay on, and I ended up getting my education paid for my bachelor's of nursing, and then I ended up getting a master's degree and becoming an advanced practice nurse with a subspecialty in gerontology and neurology. So it's been a wonderful journey. It's been a great career for me. I went from a diploma program right up to a double master's. But I've never stopped losing that contact with the patients. I always wanted to be in a strong clinical role. And now, even as CEO of a healthcare company, I still have that contact and touch with people, which is an amazing part of the nursing journey. You can go into lots of different roles. You can go into education. You can go into administration. You can go into public health. You can start your own business. You can work in lots of different areas and specialties. So it's very, very flexible career. You can balance family needs with it. And it's such an interdisciplinary collaborative role, Sri. And I would say definitely think about it as a profession. And certainly for people who might be a little intimidated, you know, you can always go at it in a stepwise, you know, incremental way. So it is an amazing profession that served me very, very well.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. And it's so great to be able to talk to a nurse on my show. I have a daily show I do on my on Twitter and Facebook. And I've been very it's been very hard to get a nurse on the air because, as we've talked about before, hospitals don't want nurses to be spokespersons for the most part because they're frontline workers. And, you know, they may not be as corporate perhaps as some of the specially trained doctors that they put on the air. And also a lot of doctors are in private practice, so they decide whether they speak or not. And there aren't as many nurses who have that opportunity. So I'm so glad that you're able to be with us, and for so many reasons. But one of these is that nurses rule, right? They are wonderful, and we are so glad. Let's get in another caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bronx. My name is Sati. I want to find out kind of two-part question. One is asymptomatic and pre-asymptomatic. What is the difference between the two? I understand the asymptomatic one can be asymptomatic, catch an infection, and he or she is asymptomatic, and then he or she may become okay, and one would never know that he or she got the infection and became okay or not. Now, is that possible?
Okay, Anne, you tell us what you know of this. We, as we had said before, we had a doctor who was with us who has spent a lot of time talking and educating the public on these issues. But while we were on the air, he got an emergency call for surgery in the ER, and he had to leave a non-COVID story. But that just tells you the days we're living in now. So, Anne, please share what you can.
Sure. So that's a great question. Asymptomatic means that you could – there are a certain amount of carriers of this virus that show absolutely no symptoms, right? And, in fact, if you look at some of the literature that's coming out, they even say almost about 20 to 25% may be asymptomatic carriers. This means – they are. They have the ability, they have the virus, they have the disease there, don't have any symptoms, but they could potentially transmit. They don't have a fever, they don't have a cough, but if you were if they were breathing on you or if they suddenly sneezed on you, even though they don't have a fever, you could get infected. That's an asymptomatic carrier, right? Now, pre-symptomatic, this is also a very interesting and also disturbing facet about this virus. You can actually harbor the virus for 48 hours before you develop your symptoms, right? So, again, it's not that you're totally asymptomatic all the time, but for 48 hours before you get sick, you can have the virus. So you're pre-symptomatic. You have the virus. You're getting these symptoms. You know, you're carrying it in your oropharyngeal area, and then you can then go on to be symptomatic, right? You then shed the virus, but you could have been shedding 48 hours beforehand. So it really, to my mind, really shows me that I think wearing masks when we're out and about is so important because of this, because of the pre-symptomatic and asymptomatic carriers. This is why it is important for us to be wearing masks, not only to, you know, for us to protect our, you know, to protect others, right? We're all in this together. We're human helping humans, so we need to view ourselves not only as somebody who could actually get the virus from others, but who could actually transmit. Are we one of those asymptomatic carriers? Will we develop this infection in 48 hours? if we are mindful with social distancing, social isolation, doing all the hand washing, doing all the surface cleaning, but also wearing our mask outside when we're in contact with each other, keeping those rules, I think that's just an extra tool in our box to reduce the likelihood of the spread.
Now, my question is, if one is asymptomatic, in other words, he is infected but not show the any symptoms at all, he's mm-hmm. likely to become okay. I mean, uninfected after a while. So for what period of time he will remain infected and can communicate this disease to somebody else, can infect somebody else?
So that's a great question. And, you know, I look at the CDC guidelines and, you know, they will say, you know, they will say that, you know, if you've been exposed, for example, just say you were exposed to somebody, within 7 days, you know, if you haven't developed symptoms, you should be okay. I like to actually go much longer than that. I like to go 14 days because I had a caregiver that had been exposed to somebody who had very likely COVID symptoms. And I had to make sure that that worker was safe to go back with my client, right, who was an elderly client. And I told her, I said, I really want to play it safe here. I want to go 14 days with you because you're coming, even though you're asymptomatic, you're coming back into a very frail, vulnerable elder, right? She's 95. And you're going to be in close contact with her. So I would like you to be able to do this for me. Well, on day 12, she developed muscle aches and chills. And how glad was I to make that extra call for those extra few days? I think this is the thing that we still don't know a whole lot about in terms of how it responds to different people. But I think 14 days, 2 weeks is a good period of time where you've had it. If you think you've been exposed and you don't have any symptoms, doing 14 days.
And can one become okay after showing only a little bit of a symptom like body ache or maybe some sneezing but no temperature, nothing else, or some other kind of symptom, and then become okay by himself or herself? And,
I've seen in some of my clients, this elderly gentleman I had spoken to about earlier on the show, he had developed a low-grade fever, he had developed headache, and then he felt good for 1 or 2 days. His fever went down, and then he developed a sore throat and a raspy cough, and then his fever went down again. And so there was this undulating pattern. It was kind of waxing and waning, and I had a caregiver with him who wore an N95 mask and cared for him, and he came out absolutely fine at the end of it. You know, he did not feel well for 7 days and then got better. But during that 7-day pattern, there was, like you said, the symptoms changed. They waxed and waned a bit. But everybody is different. And this virus affects different people differently. And you hear about some young people who are, it's so surprising. They got so ill, so sick, you know. What are their comorbidities? What was their immune system like for that? And why did my older man do quite well after it? I think the doctors will be able to tell us more after, you know, learning this about this disease. But I think, you know, our genetics may play a role, our immune system may play a role, whether diabetes or having a high blood sugar plays a role on that. That's another thing they're looking into. So, and there's still so much more to learn from this. But I think if you just are overly cautious, and, you know, I like to just be that extra bit cautious, it's going to serve you well. And you'll know yourself that you've done the best that you could. So I like to add that little extra, if I can, to do that protection. I hope that helps.
Okay, last question. These people say that, okay, you can be tested, but only if you show some symptoms. But if one is asymptomatic, he or she is not going to show any symptom, and yet he's a carrier of the infection. So how can one find out if, you know, I think it has to be given kind of indiscriminately to whoever wants it to find out really whether the person is infected or not.
So thank you, caller. And we've got another caller also we want to bring in, and we're almost out of time. So let's get our next caller in. You're on WBAI on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, good afternoon. It's Annette. I'm from Manhattan. And I just was hearing the program and wondering about that AI software that is going to be tracking people's symptoms and movements and so forth. How do you prevent that type of company from using that as a tool for surveillance in the general population?
Thank you. Great question. I'm going to have Anne participate in this part because she uses the tool. But let me just say my background is on using and understanding digital technology. And this is something that I care a lot about. And in a future episode of Coping with COVID, we will address that specifically. But in this case, as I understand it from Anne, these are people voluntarily working with this company so that their doctors and nurses and health caregivers at a distance can monitor. Is that correct, Anne?
Yes, this is, it's interesting. It's a very good question that the caller has. And I definitely, had questions about, HIPAA, how is the information gathered and protected? Well, first of all, the client themselves must agree to have their voice recorded. And they are agreeing to that knowing, that it's not the content of their conversations that's being monitored at all. It's really the placidity of the voice, and they're going to get a benefit from this. They're agreeing to this. So it is there is consent for that. They understand that. The company themselves, protects that data, and it doesn't listen to any of the data because apparently the AI algorithms, and through you may be able to know better, but it's almost as if, nobody could actually listen to the content because it's listened to on a different level on the platform, right? So the second part of that is we are all being surveilled using our phones, right? And they're whenever you use Google, whenever you use Facebook, whenever you're using your iPhone on Maps, we're all living in this new reality, and it's very hard to separate yourself to say, well, I'm going to use this, but I'm not going to use that. And I think this is becoming even more of an issue when they talk about how these new apps like Google and Apple, I don't know if you guys have read about the collaboration they're doing now about possibly using, Google and Apple to do some surveillance tracing with COVID to be able to show us, who's been exposed and not exposed. So these are really, really good questions you're answering. And I suppose it always ends up with being the risk benefit and where does the line go in terms of what we're willing to tolerate both as ourselves and as a society.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you, caller. These are the kinds of issues we want to get into. We say the show is helpful and hopeful, so we want to find the best things in the world that can help us, but also watch out for the things that can get us in trouble. We're almost at the end of the show, and I want to thank you so much for being here. I'm just looking at your Twitter. You are at HealthSense LLC, HealthSense LLC. Please follow her. Tell us a little bit quickly about your company and where people can learn more and connect with you.
Sure, Sri. So HealthSense is an aging life care management company, and I have seven nurses and a social worker and two cognitive enrichment specialists, and we're all about empowering seniors to thrive. We strategically plan with families on how to age better in the home. We do some crisis management as well. We do cognitive enrichment with seniors who are socially isolated, and we also do some benefit navigation. So we do a range of services. And I'm part, as well as you mentioned, part of a nonprofit group called the Aging Life Care Association, where you can find companies like mine all around the country by going on the aginglifecare.org website and entering in your zip code.
You'll find an aging life care specialist near you that can help you navigate some of the challenges of aging or go along with you on that journey of aging with your loved ones. So I am delighted to have been here on the show with you today, Sri, and thank you for having a nurse.
Thank you. And Anne, is that health-sense.org is the website? Health-sense.org. So do check that out. And her Twitter handle is HealthSense LLC. And she says she's a fan of aging strategically. Aren't we all? She's also a rugby fanatic. And I got to say, Anne, as a fellow immigrant, the only time I heard the non-American accent come out was when you said Ireland. Thank you so much, Anne. You were supposed to be with me for an hour, and you just gave us 2 full hours to WBAI and its listener community. We're so grateful to you. Thank you, and we'll have you on again if you will give us your time.
Thank you, Sri. It's been my pleasure. Take care, and stay well, everybody.
Thank you, and what a generous and wonderful person all Anne is as a nurse by training and background and DNA, but all nurses, we salute them as we do all our healthcare workers. Folks, that brings us towards the end of another show. This is Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful show. We want your suggestions. We want your feedback. We want to make sure that we can help you. We're here every Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and WBAI.org and WBAI 99.5 FM. Please send me your feedback, SREE at SREE.net, SREE at SREE.net. We had several people send in emails last time. I'm so grateful. And you can also tweet me at SREE, SREE, and at WBAI. And the hashtag is WBAISREE. If you found the show helpful, please reach out to WBAI.org. Make a donation. You can make a donation in the name of this show or any of the shows you love on WBAI, because we as New Yorkers and friends of New York want to stick together and be safe. So please do check out WBAI.org and all the great programming there. And I myself on my Facebook and my Twitter and my YouTube have a daily COVID-19 call that I do. And you can join that. The easiest way to find me is to go on YouTube and find me. SreeNet is my YouTube handle, SREENET. And you can see all my shows there. They're archived there. And on WBAI, you can find all my WBAI shows. So that's it. Please share your feedback. Stay safe out there, folks, and stay home if you can, if you have to go out to work. Thank you, thank you, thank you. See you next week, everybody. Goodbye.
listening to WBAI New York. I'm Celeste Katz-Marston. This is New York in Crisis, WBAI's coronavirus diary.
Scott Stringer, New York City Comptroller. When I lost my mom to the coronavirus, she had been sick for the last few months, but once she got this deadly disease, it really was downhill. And she was an amazing fighter, a single parent, a former school teacher. She taught English as a second language to new immigrants. She ran for city council in the 1970s and actually won her election at a time when women were starting to actually win elections. It was always an uphill struggle for her. I remember when I was a teenager campaigning for her, and voter after voter would say to her, "Why aren't you home taking care of your husband?" And she would say, "I don't have a husband." And it went from there. And so we as a family mourn her loss greatly. She went to the hospital and they did everything they could, but of course it wasn't enough and she passed away. But I am very grateful to the EMS workers who took her to the hospital. Think about the nurse who I would call during the day to see how she was, to the doctors who fought for her life. And they're doing this for not just, you know, my mother, but for mothers and fathers and grandparents. And I can't tell you, Celeste, how much they are the front responders, the frontline people who are the heroes of our country and our city right now. You can't have a funeral. In my case, you can't have a shiva. I can't see my stepfather because he's quarantined. I have two little kids, an 8-year-old and a 6.5-year-old, and they don't know why we don't have a funeral, and they don't truly understand what's going on around them. And we're trying to talk to them and give them guidance. I tell them, and I'll tell everyone, there are better days ahead. We will beat this virus. Very comforting, even though there was no funeral. The messages I got from people, many whom I didn't know, text messages, emails, Twitter responses, it really mattered to our family and to my wife. And it's very soothing. And I would hope that people are doing the same for others. You know, people think that it's all impersonal, but it's actually not. And I would really hope that people go out of their way when they hear of a tragedy or hear someone sick, contact that family member, contact that daughter or son. It is very helpful, and it's gotten me through this. Look, with this president, it's going to be pulling teeth to get the resources we need. It means we're going to have to step up, all of us, and fight for New York City. We also have to realize we're going to have to restart our economy. You know, I had said to the mayor, put money aside in all the boom years he had. After 9/11, after Hurricane Sandy, something always comes our way. And right now he's grappling with the fact that he didn't put away a lot of money and he didn't save like he should have. And we're going to have to recognize that going forward as we try to help the people who are most in need. This president should have acted as an adult, relying on science and strategy rather than acting like the clown he has always been. I do think he has blood on his hands. All the people who are losing their parents and grandparents because he didn't understand what was coming his way. And I think that will be his legacy. My mother, like many of her generation, would say, don't agonize, organize. And there's no time to give up and throw up your hands. If my mother's passing is to mean anything, if the lives of the people who will not be here with us because of bad mistakes by our government, we can't walk away. I'm going to go do my job. That's what my mother would have wanted me to do. That's what she asked me to do every morning I woke up. And she would call with an opinion about Andrew Cuomo or this one or that one and what I should be doing. So I hear her voice and I know what I have to do.
Scott Stringer is the controller of the City of New York. Stay tuned for more installments of New York in Crisis, WBAI's Coronavirus Diary, and for the latest news and updates.